Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm happy to have Dr. Quentin Henning on my show once again. Dr. Henning is the chairman and president of Novo Resources. Novo Resources has been a sponsor to this show. Novo has been a recommendation in my newsletter since August 9th, 2013. At that time, the company was selling at 80 cents in U.S. money. The shares started out this year at 59 cents in U.S. money, so it wasn't looking like one of my better calls until the stock caught fire in July on news of a massive field of gold nuggets hosted in conglomerate rocks, similar to but seemingly much more significant than the gold deposit being developed by Novo at Beaton's Creek, some 350 kilometers east of this new discovery. At the start of the year, Novo was my largest personal holding, so needless to say, when the stock exploded to a high of $7 in U.S. funds, it became by far the most dominant asset in my portfolio. At its height, it accounted for some 67% of my portfolio. Since then, a decline in the shares of Novo to around $2.60 in U.S. money and a partial sale has trimmed Novo back to just 20% of my portfolio, but it's still considerably my largest holding. So the question on my mind, as well as on the mind of many investors who have learned about Novo this year, is whether or not the share price was much ado about nothing, or whether Dr. Henning's geological theories about how gold was formed in the Great Witwatersrand Rand deposit of South Africa, which was in fact what brought him to northwestern Australia, may still be valid. In other words, given the volatility of the share price for Novo this year, what I would like to accomplish with my discussion with Dr. Henning today is to ask him to put this story into perspective based on what has been learned so far with exploration work carried out on the company's 50% joint venture Purdy's Reward Project. Welcome, Dr. Henning, and thanks for joining me again today.
Thank you, Jay.
I'd really like to focus on your press release of December 21st that the market didn't seem to take too kindly. For quite a few years, you have been searching for another Witwatersrand-like deposit, which took you to northwestern Australia. You came up with a unique view that the Witwatersrand was formed by a precipitation event approximately 2.7 billion years ago or so, as oxygen was first being formed on planet Earth by way of photosynthesis. As I recall, what took you to northwestern Australia were at least two conditions. One was that the rocks needed to be of that age, around 2.7 billion years, and you also needed to find a very shallow, low-energy marine environment. Do I have that right?
Yes, those are a couple of the more important aspects. There's a few more, but that's a good start.
Okay. So at this stage of Novo's exploration efforts, what are your thoughts in terms of your hypothesis regarding the potential for finding something akin to the Great Witwatersrand deposit in northwestern Australia? Are you encouraged or discouraged with the prospects of success based on what you have learned thus far?
Sure, Jay. That's actually a very good question, very timely. We're learning a lot. We've tried to convey to the market an accurate picture of what we see, what we're experiencing in the field, and give people a representative indication of where this thing might head. Okay, so we have to be forthright about things. I guess where I would start is by saying that when you go looking for something and you think you're going to find it exactly the same, in geology at least, it seldom proves to be true. In other words, you go looking for something and what you find is somewhat different. Let me give people a little background on the Witwatersrand and the deposits there. There's really two types of gold ore in the Witwatersrand Basin. One of the types, and the one that most people, hear about or know about, are the conglomerate-hosted gold deposits. All right, these are beds of conglomerate, anywhere from, say, a few tens of centimeters up to a meter or two thick. They are laterally continuous. They continue for strike lengths of several kilometers in many cases, both laterally and down dip into the basin. The beds of conglomerate are dominated by quartz pebbles. These are basically pebbles that are almost universally comprised of quartz, like vein quartz, chert, things like this. They also have a component of finely rounded what we call buckshot pyrite, which are little round granules of pyrite, probably detrital in origin. And then they have gold. The gold in the Witwatersrand conglomerates is commonly reasonably fine grained. It's not necessarily fine in terms of micron scale, but it's on the order of, we'll call it, 50 to 100 micron, say, average grain size. In some places it gets coarser than that. Some places it gets up to millimeter size. But, it's fairly fine grain, and as such, it's fairly easy to sample the material. You can grab a sample of conglomerate and assay it and determine the grade. I've assayed many samples from the Witwaters, and I even assayed the Discovery outcrop, which is in Johannesburg. Got an average grade of 15 grams per ton off of that outcrop. It's about a half a meter thick. Okay, there's a second type of gold ore in the Witwatersrand Basin. It's usually down dip or further out into the basin from the conglomerate style. That's the carbon leader type ore. The carbon leader is a thin seam, usually no more than a few millimeters thick, even sometimes as thin as less than a millimeter, believe it or not. And it's basically a small seam of carbon in composition. It's actually referred to as carrier. And I believe that that's a fossil remnant of a bacterial mat, a cyanobacterial mat, and that was responsible for precipitating the gold out of seawater. And without going into great detail about that, I'll leave it at that. So the model is, let's go find another Witwatersrand. I believe that the age of the Witz is important. It formed a very specific time period in Earth's history when photosynthesis was developing in a big way. There was probably initial photosynthetic organisms dating back to very early Earth's history, 3.6 billion years or so. But it was really this event around, say, 2.9 billion that locked it in. So the carbon leader is really the first big gold event. Okay, so where else can we look for this on Earth? Well, there's not too much crust around this planet that's of that age. The Pilbara Craton in Australia is certainly the biggest and best example of crust that's available to explore. There's a bit in India, there's a bit in Brazil, there's little scraps and pieces in other places around the globe. But the Pilbara Craton, where we've been exploring for about 6 or 7 years now, is really the focus of our effort. All right, so we go to Australia. We worked in the East Pilbara for nearly 6 years now, focused on Beaton's Creek and a few places around Marble Bar. We found conglomerates with gold that are similar to those in the Witz, but they're big bouldery conglomerates. They're not pebbles or boulder, but they are quartz dominant. Okay, they have that in common. The pyrite is also in common. We find detrital pyrite in our conglomerates at Beaton's Creek and so forth, and the gold is very similar in nature. There is gold that's on the order of millimeters in size. There's also a component of gold at Beaton's Creek that's fine grain. All right, so we felt okay. Well, let's see if we can come up with something more. We've kept our eye on the situation in the Pilbara for a long time. Around a year ago, actually more than a year ago, got rumor that there was gold being found in the West Pilbara. It was in an area where there were no conglomerates mapped. In fact, the area had been mapped as basalt. Basalt is a lava, of course. So this is a starkly different environment than what we were looking for or what we anticipated. Nonetheless, people were finding large volumes of gold nuggets with metal detectors. These are local prospectors from the Karratha area. All right, so we quickly shifted gears, and to put things into perspective, that was a little over 9 months ago. Okay, so We aggressively staked ground. We did other land deals to kind of tie up and consolidate an area to explore. The area we refer to as Purdy's Reward is one prospect, but the Comet Well side of it, which is immediately adjacent, is the rest of the subcropping or outcropping conglomerates that we have. All right, so I would say we completed our land acquisition mode around the end of August. And then we started to explore. We came in very aggressively looking at these conglomerates as though they might be more like Beaton's Creek. We had indications it was a fine-grained gold component based on an initial sample we collected in July, and then assayed in August and announced to the market. I believe it was August 8th. We had some indications there was a fine-grained disseminated gold component. We were pretty good about how we could advance this. We devised a strategy to do core drilling and scout drilling, and then do large diameter drilling to capture bulk samples. We have to get bulk samples because of the coarse gold. And then we also had a trenching component. We recognized that this was a different beast. This was a coarse gold system, meaning the gold was on the scale of millimeters or greater, even in centimeters in places. So it's a different beast. The conglomerate's quite a bit different. The clasts in the conglomerate actually are mostly mafic igneous rocks, not quartz, pebbles and cobbles and whatnot. So it's starkly different than the Witwatersrand in that respect. All right, but the way we viewed this was, after doing quite a bit of geology, once we could get in and dig up some trenches and actually see the rocks close up, we developed a model around late October, early November, that we were in a nearshore environment, but a high energy one. It was clear that The gold that we were seeing was rounded. It was, you know, the clasps were large, angular in places. It was not a distal, we'll call it, you know, far out in the basin. This was a nearshore environment, fairly hungy. We conveyed that to the market. But what we did not recognize until just recently was that the fine-grained gold component that we thought was there, this disseminated fine-grained gold component, is proving to be localized. It's basically a fine-grained halo of remobilized gold immediately around the nuggets in the conglomerates themselves. So what that means is, in order to sample this and get a meaningful, you know, representation of the gold content of the rock, we have to take very large samples. We are currently stepping back and looking at this, looking at how we're going to do this. We have a 3-ton sample in right now to a metallurgical laboratory in Australia to do some what we call size by analysis. These are looking at the gold distribution, the gold, the grain size of the gold, and so forth. And based on that work, we hope to get a better picture of what is an appropriate sample size, an appropriate large sample size for getting an assay out of this rock. Now, we did collect quite a few bulk samples in the past couple of months. We put some of those out in the December 21st news release. You'll see that there were two samples, one graded, I believe, a little over 15 grams, and one graded a little over 17 grams. It's a very good start. That conglomerate is, in many respects, it's a what I refer to as a transgressive lag, or geologists would refer to. It's basically a horizon along which heavy minerals, including gold, were concentrated. And in that respect, it is like the Witwatersrand. But again, the geology of it, the clasts, and many other aspects, you know, the gold size in particular, are quite different. All right, but we did get some good assays. We put those out in front of the market, but we also put out some drill holes. These are diamond drill holes. They were intended to be scout drill holes. We did go ahead and assay them because of our handicap with the large diameter drilling, and we found that the drill holes basically did not hit a gold component. All right, so there's nothing I can do about it. I wish I could change geology. That's the way it works, you know. I have to tell it like it is. The gold in those drills, there was, you know, anomalous gold, and it belongs to the horizons. But to put it in perspective, at Beaton's Creek, when we hit, let's say we were drilling our conglomerates, and one of the holes happens to hit, you know, a boulder dominant part of the section. In other words, it doesn't hit a lot of matrix. Well, we still see an appreciable amount of gold, maybe half gram or something, you know. In this case, at Purdy's, no, it's not doing that. It's you have to get in there and muscle out a large sample before you can determine the grade. The gold is truly in nugget form, and it has a very, very fine, limited amount of fine-grained gold immediately around the vicinity of the nuggets. Well, what do we do? Okay, some people are throwing up their hands and saying, oh, no, well, you know, they're hopeless. They're never going to solve it. But I would urge people to remember, we did a placement back in September with Kirkland Lake. They've seen the property. They know some of these issues, okay? And they put $56 million in a very early stage. That money is intended to go and solve some of the issues we have here. If people don't appreciate that, I would urge them to sit for a second and think. Kirkland was willing to stump up $56 million knowing that we had some of these issues. And more importantly, they said, you know what, let's make sure Novo has the cash they need to overcome this, to meet these challenges. I'm very grateful for that. We end the year with about $70 million Canadian in the bank. We have plenty of money to advance this project. We are not throwing up our hands. We think it is a very large, very solid gold project. You do not just see localized gold. We see gold scattered along 8 kilometers at Purdy's. We see gold of similar type in many other locations around the. This is not a one-off freak of nature. This seems to be a real strong gold system. It is different than the Witwatersrand, but my view is that we are in an environment that is simply not preserved in the Witwatersrand. So you do not have this type of rock preserved in the Witwatersrand Basin. Well, what does that mean? Maybe further out into the Fortescue Basin where we're exploring, maybe this thing evolves down dip into a Witwatersrand type deposit. That's certainly something we're going to look at in 2018. We are also going to look at how we're going to sample and get meaningful data out of this coarse gold environment that we are in at surface here. All right, so we are looking at appropriate size of sample, how we're going to process bulk samples, a lot of different aspects of the work we need to do to move this project forward. We are not throwing up our hands. We think we have a very good discovery here, and we are going to apply the money and the gift that we've been given to do this hard work.
Good. With regard to the carbon leaders, do you see that as something likely to be found as you continue exploring and down dip and into the basin? I noticed that you did a couple of step outs, I think 300 meters from where the samples were taken, down deeper in the basin. Have you found anything there that might be encouraging with regard to, I think you mentioned it could be an evolving system?
Correct. So let's talk about that for a minute. Okay, the Witwatersrand Basin, when they started mining gold in the Wits, they were focused on the conglomerate ores. They didn't even know about the carbon leader until they mined down dip. Okay, they were in the higher energy environment, not high energy like we have at Karratha, but they were still in a higher energy environment when they first started mining at Johannesburg. It took them years before they got into the conglomerates and appreciated into the carbon leader and appreciated it for what it was, that it was a unique style of ore. All right, anyway, let's go back to Karratha now. Okay. We are in a nearshore environment. We can tell that. Hands down, geologically, no question. But we have a huge basin. It's tens of thousands of square kilometers in size. We have a land position roughly 10,000 square kilometers in the Karratha area. All right. How far down into the basin this thing might evolve, we don't know. It could be a kilometer down. It could be 5 kilometers down. We don't know. But here's what we see right now. We see in the three holes that we drilled on the south side of the Purdy's area an increase in quartz content. We see an increase in what we call buckshot pyrite. Those are both very Witwatersrand-like features. Do we see carbon leader? No, we don't yet. If there is carbon leader, my hunch is it's further out into the basin. Here's another thing we see. A lot of the gold we have at Purdy's, simply, it has a chemical characteristic that simply cannot be accounted for by local load gold sources. In other words, it doesn't appear to have washed out of the basement and into the basin. Therefore, my hunch is that the gold that we're seeing, albeit it's been tumbled around, it's been moved, shifted, rolled around and rounded, is at least in part derived from something that we have yet to find that's further out into the basin. All right, so those are a couple of things. One other thing I would say is very important is you don't necessarily, like in the Witwatersrand Basin, the environment was just right. In other words, that carbon leader was preserved in situ, which is remarkable. Think about this, a very soft mat of algae growing on the seafloor, and it was very, very carefully preserved between two sandstone horizons. That's remarkable, okay? It could be geologically, it could be that what we have here has been completely reworked, completely shifted around. That's another possibility.
Yeah, it would have to be a very low energy environment, I guess, for that preservation of the carbon leader in South Africa.
But what we might see, look at Beaton's Creek, once we were able to get down into the fresh rock, collect some samples and pick them apart, we started to find pieces of carbon. Might we find something similar at Karratha? I think there's a good chance. We've seen some very interesting classer features in rock cobbles that are in the conglomerate that suggests there was a biogenic component on Earth or in the basin as the thing was forming.
You mentioned you've taken several bulk samples, I believe you said, or channel samples. Have you reported all of them? Are there still some that you will be reporting sometime soon?
We've got lots of, I don't know the exact number off the top of my head, but I would put it in the order of a dozen to 20, I believe, bulk samples. These are samples anywhere from a few hundred kilos up to a few tons. And they were taken out of trenches that we excavated in the last couple of weeks of the field program, really around December 1st to the middle of December.
I have an idea that the people that are the investors have, when the fine grain issue wasn't there, when it became known that you couldn't sample this thing easily, as well as I think people started looking at your latest press release, realizing that you're talking about a very thin, maybe 40 centimeters thick, gold-bearing area in the conglomerate, at the bottom of the conglomerate, as I understand it. You know, I read somewhere that in South Africa, I think you might have mentioned a little while ago, that the gold-bearing reefs sometimes were, you know, between 10 and 200 centimeters thick or something like that. So that also was a very thin, but those carbon leaders were incredibly rich, I guess, though, right?
Correct. The little carbon leaders were on the order of percentage of gold. Uh-huh. So, you know, a 2 or 3 millimeter thick carbon leader that's running 3% gold can still carry, you know, basically a mineable face 1.1 meters thick. On the note of our conglomerate, look, if people Google Discovery Outcrop Johannesburg or Discovery Outcrop Witwatersrand and then look at images, there's pictures taken from the Discovery Outcrop at the park in Johannesburg, and you can see the main leader reef is all of a half a meter thick. All right, so, you know, people say, oh, gee, you know, they're dealing with a thin unit. First of all, the basal unit appears, like, we don't know everything yet, but it appears to float in places. In other words, it sometimes it's resting straight on the basement. Other places, it looks like it's higher in the section. What we also know is that there's gold being derived from the conglomerates above that horizon. Mm-hmm. There's no way that gold leapt up through this, you know, the ground and landed on the soil above it. So there's definitely gold being shed from the conglomerates above. The indication we have right now is that the third bulk sample that was in the news release ran 1.3 grams.
You know, when you were focused on Beaton's Creek several months or a year ago, 2 years ago even maybe, you mentioned to me that mechanized mining of thin sheets like those at Beaton's Creek, or maybe what you're finding here, might be a possibility, and that, in fact, a similar flat-lying tabular sheet-like structures hosting copper were being mined, I think, in some place in the world, maybe Poland.
Poland, now, yes.
Yeah, I realize that this is all very speculative at this point in time because it just, you know, you're really early on in the exploration process, but might a mechanized mining process, you know, looking into the future, might that be a possibility? I mean, it seems incredible because if you're looking at, you know, 40 centimeters of gold-bearing horizon, if that's what you're looking at, the grading 17 grams or 15 grams, the dilution could be very significant. And it seems to me that's probably another thing that hit the stock, you know, when people started looking at that. But is that something that's crossed your mind?
Look, yes, it is. It's something we've thought about at Beaton's Creek, as you said. I've had discussions with you. What I would urge people to do is once again, get on Google, and they can type in hard rock stopers, long wall hard rock stopers. Okay, Caterpillar makes a machine. It's now commercial. It was in test phase about 3 or 4 years ago. Now it's fully commercial. It's a machine that's about 1.4 meters thick or tall, and it's basically a large device about 50 meters long. You put in two drives and a cross cut. You lay up the machine in the cross cut, and you basically build the machine up in there, and it mines a continuous face as it advances forward. These are things that are being developed in real time. You're seeing more and more of them on the market, and I would say in 5 or 10 years, you know, there will be advances to the point where these things are commonplace, just like tunnel borers are now.
You know, one question I had concerning the Steiner sorting machine, you talked about that in the first bulk sample you put out that had, you know, graded something like 2 ounces, a little over 2 ounces per ton, and you talked about the efficiency and that Steiner sorting machine was working really well. I believe you've had that assembled at your current facility, the Nagram facility. Is that something that's still working out well for you?
Okay, so the machine that we used back in July of last year, or this year, excuse me, was in transit. It was actually purchased by a large mining company in Australia, and it was going to one of their mine sites. Nagram happened to get access to it so they could test out our sample. When we saw that we had coarse gold, we went to the various laboratories around Perth, and we said, who can come up with the best idea of how to assay this stuff? And Nagram stuck their hand up and said, let's try this Steiner machine. We did. It worked fantastic. We managed to capture over 80% of the gold into a mass of just 2.4%. That's the kind of efficiency you want to see in, you know, even in a commercial scale. I mean, that's fantastic. So let's advance. We decided to go that route with our assay. Nagram purchased their own Steinert machine. It was a different machine than the one that went on to the mine in the Eastern Goldfields. So this machine has not, to this point, has not quite performed as well as the previous one. We're seeing mass pulls in the order of 10 to 30%. They've done a lot of work to try to figure out how to optimize it, get the mass pulls down to like 2%. What I'm saying by that, Jay, just so people know, is that what we're talking about is concentrating, you know, taking a bulk of rock, 100% of the rock, and trying to concentrate it down to, say, 2 or 3% of the mass and still have most of the gold in that rock. Okay, so that's our goal. Why the current Steinert machine does not operate as efficiently as the previous one, I don't know. We've had many discussions about it. I am not a specialist in that area, but my impression is the current machine is getting too many positives. In other words, it's identifying rock particles that it thinks has gold but don't. We are working on it. They have improved, you know, just as in the past couple of weeks before we went on Christmas break. But we'll continue working on that in the early part of next year.
All right. Well, we're just about out of time. There's so much more to ask you. And of course, you can get down into the weeds, into the detail of those people who are, you know, have the patience and the interest to do so. Just a couple of things I'd like to ask you about. You commented in your press release about the purity of gold, 87 to 100%, and mostly upwards towards the 100%. Talk to our listeners about why that's significant, why that's important.
Well, it goes back to something I tried to convey about 10 minutes ago. The gold that's of higher purity is simply not present in the basement, meaning the hard rock lode deposits. There's very few veins or lode deposits in the basement in the area. So trying to account for the fact we have what seems to be a fairly high purity of gold in these nuggets is very difficult. That gold more closely resembles something I would consider like a Witwatersrand type gold chemistry.
Okay. And one other thing, you mentioned gold is not supergene. Tell our listeners why that's important.
Yeah, look, a lot of people out there for some reason think this gold is supergene. Now, let me explain what that means. Okay, when you have a gold deposit, when it's first formed, and then it's brought to the surface as erosion and weathering take place. Sometimes the oxidation at surface, that's the interaction with waters and the chemistry of the near surface environment, actually remobilize and reprecipitate gold. They concentrate it in what we call a supergene deposit. Super meaning superimposed or super cut down. Okay, the gold that we see at Comet Well and Purdy's is by no stretch supergene. Everything we've seen, you can look at the photos we put on the internet. They're rounded nuggets. There is remobilized gold in a halo around the nuggets, but that remobilization probably occurred shortly after the nuggets were buried into the conglomerates, and there was some chemistry, you know, some waters or something that interacted with the nuggets to produce that fine gold. We do not see any supergene component at Kerr-Arthur.
That's important, then. One last question regarding Beaton's Creek. Where does that stand now?
Yeah, Beaton's Creek, we simply exceeded our bandwidth. That's a large reason for why we haven't advanced as quickly. We focused on Kerr-Arthur, especially when we started to see some of these issues pop up. We focused all of our effort. You know, we're a small, reasonably small team. We simply did not have the bandwidth, but we have accomplished a few things that we'll talk about early next year, in particular some steps that we're taking to advance the project towards production.
All right. Finally, in closing, what should investors really be looking forward to the next several weeks and months to come? What are the drivers that people should really be focused on?
Okay, in the short term, we will have assays from a number of bulk samples. We'll also have the size by analysis that'll tell people, it'll give them some comfort around the potential grade of this deposit. That's in the very, very short term, and everybody must keep in mind that we're focused entirely at Purdy's right now. We're now going to step out to Comet Well and start exploring there. All right. So we're moving out of this little tiny sandbox we've been in and starting to look at the bigger picture. Over the next 6 months, we hope to have similar answers, to what we have at Purdy's at Comet Well. We'll report those as we find them. There's a lot of gold at Comet Well. We haven't been able to talk about it because the tenements weren't granted. We haven't been able to take rock chip samples and basic work like that. But now we're going to start digging in and showing the world that the continuity of this thing along strike is quite remarkable, that it is a very large gold system. The Comet Well expands this thing dramatically. So over the next 6 months, we hope to show people conclusively that this is a viable gold discovery. We will probably have to implement bulk sampling, perhaps bulk mining, in a trial mining phase. Those are things that I can see in the 6 to 12 months or even 18 months out.
All right. It should be very, very, very exciting for sure.
Sure.
It's one of the most, if not the most interesting gold exploration story that I've followed in the many years that I've been writing a newsletter. It's certainly one that we'll want to keep up with. So thank you very much, Quinton, for spending time with us. Your time is more valuable than any time since I've learned to know you. I know that. So it is greatly appreciated. And Happy New Year to you and to your family. And let's hope things go really well for you and for all the investors that are hanging in there with Novo Resources.